I'd like to introduce the first of our speakers, Michael Molnar, who for most here today doesn't need any introduction. Michael worked at the Freud Museum from just before its opening in 1986 until 2009. From 2003 to 2009, he was its director. At the time of the archive conference, of which he was a co-organiser, he was in charge of archives and research. When, at the time, Elizabeth Rudinesco addressed him as the archivist, he repudiated that title. Perhaps his contribution will include an explanation why. Michael Molnar.
I'm, like the others here, present as a living witness of this event, which is, or something like anthropologists used to say, native informant. Now, I don't know if I can fulfill that role. Famously, John Lennon said, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there. Well, I have the same phenomenon with this lecture. I was there, and I don't remember it. When I say that, I should say I remember bits and pieces. I have probably a good 1960s phenomenon. I have a series of flashbacks about it. That's all I can say. And I won't go into any more of that, because there are other people who will speak more directly to Derrida and to the lecture itself. What I can testify and be witness of is the preparations for this lecture, so I can go into something of the background behind it, the background of the conference itself and of the Freud Museum at the time, which, and I think this does have a bearing on archives in general. Now, the first idea of it was about 18 months earlier, or 2 years or 18 months. I was in Paris, I was speaking to Elizabeth Rudinesco. I told her about the dire financial straits of the museum, and she immediately and generously reacted by saying, we shall have a fundraising campaign. So there was a fundraising campaign, and I remember the letterhead, which had all the great and good of the Paris intellectual scene, not from A to Z, but at least from B to W, because I remember Pierre Bourdieu at the top of the list and Yerushalmi at the bottom. Yerushalmi was a sort of honorary Frenchman by the fact of teaching there at the time. So this fundraising campaign was running at the time, and the conference was meant to be a culmination of it and a focus of it. Now, initially, it was meant to be quite a modest affair. This was before we knew that Jacques Derrida was on board. And the initial title, as I remember, was called État des Archives, the State of the Archives, which is an interesting title if you look at it closely, because the archives, and in this case, it really did mean the Freud archives. They were in a state, bad state, and they were also notoriously acting like a bad state in terms of locking themselves in, restricting access, etc., arbitrarily and tyrannically, as it was seen from the outside, quite justifiably at the time. So that was the original title of the archive, and of course what I've said about the state of the archives tells us something about what was going on in the background, which in short was known as the Freud Wars, now, which were raging at the time. This was a public dispute about, starting with Mason, with Swales, with Cruz, etc. This was going on publicly in the pages of the New York Review of Books, of Newsweek, etc. That's part of the history. What is not, and this here, now I can have access to my own private archives, in terms of the arrangement of the conference, was there was a secret war going on at the same time over the archives and between the Freud Museum and Sigmund Freud Archives, Inc. Now I have to go into slight technicality here. How many minutes have I had so far? I don't know.
I've had four.
The technicality is that the Freud Museum in London was technically and legally wholly owned by SFA Inc., Sigmund Freud Archives Incorporated. Now, that was a legal fiction. I won't go into all the background of it, but it meant that the director of Sigmund Freud Archives, who at the time was Harold Blum, and note Harold Blum, the pronunciation, not Bloom, so he's not the man of the Western canon, it's more loose canon. So he technically had, should have had control over the running of the museum. However, Sigmund Freud Archives Inc. is in fact almost a fiction in itself. It's a board of psychoanalysts that met in New York sporadically, about 16 or 17 of them, I think. None of them, most of them analysts, there were a couple of lawyers as well, most of them with absolutely no, I think all of them to my knowledge, no knowledge or experience of museums or running museums. Furthermore, Sigmund Freud Archives had no money. So how they could run a museum in London was an open question, it seemed. Here we come to the actual source of money of the museum was a foundation called the New Land Foundation, who are still funding the museum and funded it from the outside. And they had entered a sort of pact with Sigmund Freud Archives to run the museum. So the museum was actually controlled by a joint committee of the New Land Foundation, which is an ecological and social foundation, has nothing to do with museums again. Nobody on it had any experience of museums. That it was the family fund of Muriel Gardner, a close friend and colleague of Anna Freud's. That's how it got into the business. And it was reluctantly, I think, up to a certain point, tied to the Freud Museum. Now, in the 1990s, at the time of I'm speaking of, when I met Odin Esko, the museum was already in fairly dire financial straits. It was being bailed out periodically by the Newland Foundation. Already by the time of the conference, there were rumours that justified that the Freud Archive in London might revert from the public to the private sphere, and the museum actually be shut as a public museum. Now, they were not able to sell off the house, that was legally protected, but what could and might have happened is that it would have been a closed museum with a curator and a caretaker, with the caretaker letting in private parties or groups by arrangement only. So it would have become, in fact, a private reserve, probably mostly for the psychoanalytic community. So this was the threat in the background of this conference, and this was part of the reason why we needed funds, we desperately needed funds. And there's something beyond funds here. We're not just talking about money, we're talking about the independence of the museum as an institution, as, let's put it, an intellectual centre, let's put it that way, that the museum needed to be seen to have what I could call intellectual street cred. I mean, that means not just credibility intellectually, but intellectual credibility is also a form of access to financial credit, and that you can get grants, etc. On that basis. How many minutes? I'm finishing here. Okay. Right, so that is the basic background, that we were fighting for our existence, and Derrida and the French very kindly stepped in, and we're eternally grateful for them, not just for the cash, which went in a couple of months, but for the street cred that they contributed, which was one among many other the events around that time.
Wonderful.
Thank you.